Right, good evening and welcome everybody to the Naked Sports Show. This week's guest, everybody, is Phil Ham.
Hello.
Those are today's media mogul and regular on the Monday morning show, as well as Naked Football throughout the season. So, anyway, without further ado, what sports have you been watching this week, gentlemen?
I watched the Test match a lot.
I watched a bit of that as well, yeah. I have to admit, I watched the highlights on Five. I'm one of the non-Sky underclass, I'm afraid.
Oh, yeah. No, I watched it in between various sort of bouts of trees getting in the way of my Sky dish thing and cutting up trees. But, it was funny, wasn't it? It was a funny game, really, because sort of Sunday you sort of thought England probably wouldn't win. You thought New Zealand looked right favourites, really, didn't they? With Vettori doing so well, and then on the Monday, it, kind of England just eased their way to victory without any kind of opposition, really.
Who did you say was doing well?
Vettori.
I thought you said a Tory.
No. Well, that was Thursday.
That was Thursday. That's right.
They're all doing well, the Tories. And it's Frankie de Tory, actually. I thought Strauss's innings was pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Good 100 there. Good 100.
And Monty, of course. Monty, who, you know, everyone sort of compares Monty and Vettori because similar sort of bowlers, and although Vettori looked like he was going to be the man who was going to win the day for New Zealand, and yet in the end it was Monty's kind of Monty on the Sunday afternoon. I'm getting very confused with days of when it's
bank holiday. Bank holidays,
But it was Monty's contribution on the Sunday that really won it, I think.
I think so. It reminded me a little bit of the Old Trafford Test. In that the bowler won, except, no, actually, it doesn't. Forget I said that. But the other way round, whereas in the Old Trafford Test in 81, it was both in the magnificent innings that kind of put England in a possible winning position. Mm. And then, obviously, it was Bob Willis's famous wicket haul or whatever in the second
eight
innings.
For whatever it was, yeah. Mm-hmm.
That was that spell that won on the game. And it was kind of like a flip of that, really, when Panesar did his bit to put us in a winning position. However, it was still very losable, and you've seen England teams lose matches like that in the past.
Yeah, you see, the traditional English collapse didn't happen for once.
Yeah, exactly.
I thought the writing was on the wall. I thought we had that had trouble written all over it from our point of view, but Monty came in, came on, took some wickets and changed the game for us. So
a kiwi-shaped banana skin avoided.
Yes, and as Raimondo said a couple of weeks ago.
I think that'd be a kiwi fruit, surely.
Kiwi fruit.
Yeah, as Raimondo rightly said a couple of weeks ago, it's bowlers that win your matches taking wickets, and we duly skittled them out for a proper decent low score. Strauss found a bit of form, and suddenly we're 1-0 up with one to play. So
talking of Raimondo, you've got to feel a bit sorry for him. Rochdale losing the playoff final, the Division 2 League 2 playoff final. Is it right that they're about to embark on their 35th consecutive season in the bottom division of English football?
It's incredible,
really,
isn't it?
Something like that, isn't it? Yeah, it's a really quite a long time. So as we made the point last week, you don't want them to mess it up, because otherwise they're going to struggle to have a long way again. So hopefully they'll come again next year, Rochdale, by all accounts they've got a decent side, as have Stockport.
I thought Stockport were really good.
I didn't realise their average side of the Stockport County side was something like 21 or 22.
Was it really?
Is it Jim Gannon the manager?
Jim Gannon, yeah.
Didn't he play for them? And then
he played for them for a long time, didn't he? And he's they played really nice football, I thought. They moved the ball around very well, and I think there could be a bit of a force in League One over the next couple of seasons.
I have to also say, a friend of mine who has, I have to confess, does display a certain amount of antipathy towards Leeds United. He actually asked me to see.
You mean me?
Well, apart from
that, doesn't narrow it down at all, does it?
Well,
antipathy towards Leeds United.
This man, who shall remain nameless, but his name's Dean, he actually suggested that the entire Doncaster Rovers side deserve OBEs to services to football. Now, they are his opinions, not those of this radio station, or indeed these presenters. The two Phils might be in agreement there.
I didn't really enjoy my last experience at Leeds, I have to say. So there you go.
I wonder why.
Doncaster, again, another side that looked fairly decent, I thought. I always like the look of Jason Price, you know, the sort of player with the hair and the chap who's just been on the radio with us. He he played for Hull against us a couple of years ago at the KC Stadium, and I thought he was their most impressive player. Then
yeah,
about
then
3 weeks
go,
later. Then about 3 weeks later, he moved to Doncaster. Mm. And every time I've seen him, I think he looks like a really, really excellent prospect. And but I think he may be out of contract at Doncaster at the moment and might not get a deal there. So I don't quite understand what's happening there, because I've always thought he was a very good player. But Doncaster, I thought, looked like a really sort of solid, decent side, playing good football as well. It's good to see teams such as Doncaster and Stockport both playing decent football and coming out of winning promotion via the playoffs.
And for those of us approaching 40, like, I'm afraid, I guess everyone is in a way, but
beyond 40.
Hope for us all with Dean Winder scoring the winner for Hull.
I actually used to watch Hull, because I lived in Hull for a while when I was a student, and I watched Hull during the dim, dank days of Terry Dolan's managership, when I think they're in what is now League One, but struggling, and I think the year probably got relegated to League Two during that time. And of course, the star of the show then was Dean Winder, as his career progressed from being a pea packer in, I don't know, Findas or something like that, probably. Dean Findas, no. On to getting his way into league football with Hull, and then onwards up with Middlesbrough and Bradford and people. But, it couldn't have been a better story, could it, really, for anybody? I was actually texting a friend of mine who was in Hull at the time, who lives in Hull now, and she was saying that the streets of Hull were just absolutely deserted on Saturday afternoon. She was taking her daughter to the theatre, and she said there was just like lots of dad-shaped holes, as she described it, in the theatre. And in the interval was when they scored, and there was like an audible cheer throughout the theatre. Brilliant. Mm. And it's exactly what you want from sort of stories like that, don't you, with playoff finals. And this whole town being deserted, like Town in 78 with the FA Cup final.
Indeed.
And I think it was Hull's first appearance at Wembley. I had a friend at university myself who was a big Hull City fan, and I went to see a couple of games of theirs, and Dean Wendas was playing at the time for them too.
Yeah.
And he was making this big thing about them never having been in the top division or played at Wembley, and he was wheeling out the stat. I think it was the biggest town or city in the
biggest
Europe
city
lots
in
have
Europe.
Played in the top flight of their respective country league system. So I guess if he's out there, he's proper made up as well. So
And it's also kind of traditionally a rugby league town as well.
Yeah. Well, that's the last time they were at Wembley, wasn't it, when Hull and Hull Kingston Rovers played.
1980 Challenge Cup final.
Yeah.
Hull KR won 10-5.
No, there you go, there's a stat.
There we go. On the subject of the playoffs, we've had an email in from Ray. Hi guys, hope you're well. Okay, the mighty Roch failed at the last hurdle, but only an incompetent numpty of a referee, backed up by a spineless appeal panel, prevented our best player playing, and he would have made such a difference. Great for the club, then we can build on this next year. Question: anybody know why we no longer have summer concerts at Portman Road? I've mailed the club for their comments. Will I get a reply? Surely they cannot be so arrogant to believe that now they have money, they don't need them. Have a good show. Raimondo.
Possibly.
Anyone know?
Possibly.
Anyway, he emailed me about it later on.
Possibly Mr. Ferguson may have had a say in that.
Yeah.
He does love his pitch. I mean, understandably, it's his pride and joy, so perhaps he could have had an input.
Well, I think there may be something to that. Ray emailed me later on actually to say that he had a reply from the club, and they're saying something along the lines of, although there's nothing this year, there's plans to have them in the future. But the pitch is a very relevant issue, because I know that Alan Ferguson struggles really to keep the pitch in a decent condition, because it's not what he's working with isn't kind of up to standard. He basically wants to kind of dig a hole and replace the whole thing, which is going to cost, I think the figure I was quoted was something like £500,000, but it wouldn't be done until such time as we've spent 2 or 3 years in the Premier League. So they're kind of, although he always manages to provide us with a very decent pitch, it's kind of a struggle, because what he's working with is sort of substandard. So certainly that is probably part of the argument, and of course it depends who's touring and whether they can make a profit on it and whether they can get the people in, because I know they lost money on Neil Diamond a couple of years ago.
Hardly a surprise though.
Well, a friend of mine, who again the aforementioned Dean, he went to Neil Diamond and he loved it, he enjoyed it, which is, he's not the kind of bloke that I'd choose to go and watch myself, but
Neil Diamond.
But apparently he's really good life. So if Neil Diamond did come back, I think I'd give him a look.
He's got a hip again now, Neil Diamond, isn't he? Because he's working with Rick Rubin.
This has turned into a music show.
I know.
Is Dave Lee Travis in the building? Can he pop in if he is? Anyway, Phil, I believe I have to make an on-air apology, don't I?
You do.
I do, yes. Observant viewers will notice last week that we have
even
a rant.
Even a non-observant viewer probably would have noticed, to be fair.
We have a rant slightly. This is due to the flying pilot, the man in charge of the desk last week, i.e. me, forgetting that the following show was pre-recorded. So we actually crashed into Abel's show by 15 minutes. So
crash, it was a train wreck.
So this is my official on-air apology to Abel. We're not going to do it again. We're very sorry. And he's also asked me, he says, keep listening, because he's got the director of the Pulse Festival joining us straight after this show, and they've got a bunch of tickets to give away. So they've got prizes on their show. Our budget doesn't stretch to prizes, apart from the one when you can win a day out, a night out with me. What's the second prize, Phil?
Two nights out with the Vulture.
Aye, thank you. Boom,
indeed. Indeed, so. Another email in. This one comes from Lauren. It says, hello, Daddy, testing 1-2. This week you've actually managed to get through and work the interweb better than Mummy then, Lauren. Well done.
Yeah, well done, Lauren. We're given, look, actually, that brings us on, doesn't it? Because we gave Lauren the wig off, didn't we, with the old toddler's tip?
Yeah.
Yes, we gave Lauren the toddler's tip and the Vulture's venture. For those of you who have only just got this magnificent edifice of a show on your radar, it's me tipping horses using the traditional methods of form and going, etc., against a 2-year-old who does it by pointing at a screen. And last week, the Irish 2000 Guineas, I've hit on a bit of a ploy here, Phil, because my horse didn't run.
Another cheat.
My horse didn't run, Lawrence did and came fifth.
What was your horse called, Tim?
Sammy the Snake.
Now, I think I know why it didn't run.
Because it's got
snakes
no...
Snakes traditionally sliver and slide rather than run.
And also, there are no snakes in Ireland.
There are no snakes in Ireland. Well, you know, I should have worked that out, really. But Sammy the Snake didn't actually run, so I'm actually still on -1 pound.
So you discovered another underhand tactic, apart from picking the favourite, you're now going to bat non-runners every week.
It's a bit like Tranmere Road. When I used to come to Portman Road and put 10 men behind the ball, it's that kind of negative way to win a tipping contest, but I'm not going to go down that road, so rest assured. But sadly, now, which was Lauren's tip, was the first horse beaten about 2 furlongs out, didn't run any kind of race according to its trainer. So at the moment I'm -1 to Lauren's -2, so that's last week. Now this week I couldn't resist this race. This is the 3:35 at Goodwood, the On the House Stakes. Anything on the house is good for me. And my horse is a horse called Ordnance Row. Last time out, won over this distance. Plus...
Oh, to bomb home.
There's... Oh, I knew we invited him for his song. And also, I've done a bit of research into the pedigree. This is the son, daughter, I think it's the son, of 1996 2000 Guineas winner Mark of Esteem. So there's a bit of pedigree there, bit of pace. So that's my tip, Ordnance Row. And Phil, well, it was Fiona this week, wasn't it?
It was Fiona, because by the time I got in last night and actually started looking at emails and things, Lauren was well in bed. So it was Mummy's tip this week.
It's
rather than
Mummy's money.
Mummy's money. And she used the same technique as Lauren and pointed a finger at the screen, and she came up with Mutajar, does it?
Mutajared. Mutajared, yes. So she's gone for Mutajared.
So we'll see how that one gets. And we don't know the odds on these horses yet.
No.
On the various internet websites, they haven't got them up yet. So.
Of course, this time next week's going to be a lot easier, because we'll be looking at the Derby. So we're going to have an extended, a slightly extended slot about the Vulture's Venture and Toddler's Tip.
My money's on Danny Haynes.
Hey, Danny Haynes, the Derby horse. Yes. So that's it, wrapped up for another week. Stay tuned for more gripping tales of poor tipster and punditry next week.
Yes, indeed. Anyway, talking of the playoffs, it did occur to me on the way down here and watching them over the weekend that all, if you include the conference playoff, out of the 4 playoffs, 3 of them ended 1-0. So I don't know if that's any kind of indication of how, obviously they're hard-fought affairs, but how much pressure there is on the teams not to lose rather than there is to win. The fact that there's been a relative dearth of goals this year, and teams are getting a 1-goal lead and doing their best to protect it, or if they're such tightly fought, they're not the free-flowing football we might have seen any...
Yeah, but they were quite good games though, weren't they?
I saw most of the Leeds one, and Doncaster took the lead after half-time, much to my amusement, and then it was where... you kind of got the feeling that just by watching the game that Doncaster thought, I can't believe we're winning. We're going to let one in and again in a minute, and it'll go to extra time, or we'll let one in and then let a last minute winner in or something daft. And the longer the game went on, the more and more desperate Leeds seemed to get. And suddenly it occurred to Doncaster that they weren't possibly going to throw it away. They were going to hang on. They didn't grow again as the game went on.
But I mean, I didn't watch all that game because I was watching the cricket, but the first half, I think Doncaster were probably the better side anyway, I think, weren't they?
Yeah, they had two or three very good chances which Ankerkin managed to put a halt to by one way or another. I mean, some of them were more luck than judgment as well, but they seemed to be the better side, certainly in the first 10 or 15 minutes.
You wonder what Leeds' state of mind was going into the game as well, because obviously they've had the 15-point deduction. There's still a simmering air of resentment about that. I mean, Brian Mulwinnie, when he came on the pitch before the game, was roundly booed by the Leeds fans. He kind of seen as the man who took away the 15 points. And you do wonder if they thought that the hard work had already been done, and maybe they took Doncaster a little bit lightly.
Possibly, yeah. I mean, I think, in fairness to Leeds, actually, to come from minus 15 as they were at the start of the season to get in the playoffs and make it to the final, you've got to give them credit to that. But
yeah, I think they would have finished second without that point deduction, wouldn't they?
Yeah, they would. But no, I mean, if they've broken the rules and they've had the punishment, then them's the rules, and applied. Yeah, so
those are the rules, and all the appeals. There has to come a point where you say no more appeals and.
It did drag and drag and drag, didn't it? And it can't help the kind of atmosphere around the club. There must always be this question in the players' minds. You know, are they going to be in the playoffs? And because the appeal sort of stretched on to about a week before the playoffs, didn't it?
Yeah, I think even the last game of the season, there was Nottingham Forest could have they'd have given Leeds their points back. Nottingham Forest could have been back in the playoffs, which hardly seems fair, I think they have to sort these things out rather more quickly than they do, because obviously that's not entirely fair to leave a team such as Leeds or Forest hanging on, waiting for a decision like that. It should be decided on the pitch, not in the committee room.
And Doncaster were right in the frame as well, weren't they? Because they lost their last game away to Cheltenham, I think, which is the game that let Forest in.
Yeah.
And I think when they first made the decision they're going to go to another appeal, the appeal wasn't going to be decided until after the end of the season, and the Football League said, well, hang on a minute, this is going to throw the whole thing into complete chaos. You need a decision by the time the last game is played, so at least everybody knows where we stand, because what could have happened is that Leeds could or not have had their 15 points back after a couple of weeks after the season, when the playoffs were already halfway through. 7th place may or may not have been awarded a playoff spot, or the team who finished second then didn't get one, and it could have been all kinds of complications.
Am I right in thinking that at least Hull and Doncaster both finished third, didn't they?
Yes, they did.
I think Stockport did they as well?
Because the top three go up.
Oh, no, that's right.
So that's kind of nice for the fussy old traditionalist that I am, who's not a big fan of the playoffs, to see the teams who finished the place outside the automatics to go up, as we did back in 2000.
Yeah, and what odds would you have got on Hull and Bristol City being the two sides in the Championship playoff
at
the start of the season? They've had superb seasons.
I feel a bit sorry because I don't know if I mentioned it before. Years ago, I met Gary Johnson. He's a really nice bloke. He ran football courses up at Westerfield. Clearly, didn't do any good before anyone says. But he used to run these half-term football courses and went up there to a couple of them. He's a really nice guy.
Yeah.
He was just coming to the end of his career with Northampton Town at that point. And so obviously I'll follow his career ever since.
Because he lived in Newmarket for a while, didn't he?
That's he did, yeah. Yeah. He was obviously manager of Cambridge, and then he went to Latvia, and his journey then took him to the West Country. Part of me wanted Hull to win, because obviously not been in the Premiership, but I was kind of hoping that Gary would get Bristol City into the top flight for the first time since 1980.
Since the days of Dix out.
Alan
Dix.
The Robins, the cheerleaders they had, they were the first team to introduce cheerleaders, apparently.
Were they? Really? Yeah. I didn't know that.
The Robins, they were called.
Anyway, moving on football again, on a slightly different subject, we've got International Week this week. England, obviously, tonight against America. But the game that everyone's talking about is happening a little bit more closer to home. 127th ranked team in the world.
Ipswich Wanderers.
I think that's fantastic. I have to say, it's a bit of a coup for the town that they'll have international football again.
A coup for Wanderers. Town aren't playing.
The town. Yeah. It's Yeah, I was talking to my friend Adrian Ludbrook the other day, who's on the committee of Ipswich Wanderers, and it all's come about because of various friendships between, I think, Brian Hamilton and Ed Nichols, the chairman of Ipswich Wanderers, and because, well, Hamilton used to work with the Antiguan FA as a consultant, but Willie Donaghy is now doing that, former town coach, and that's how it all came about. And they played, I think they played the other day, I think.
They played against Lowestoft.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I've locked them in a fly on the wall in the Lowestoft dressing room when they were first told they were going to be playing Antigua away. And then it turned out it was Bungie, not Antigua. They were playing because Lowestoft's is it Crown Meadow there?
Crown Meadow.
Yeah, that's
yeah,
really
game was, you know, being being refurbished and what have you. So yeah, they played the game in Bungie. So not quite so
international exotic. Football in Bungie.
Can you name any Antiguan international footballer of the past?
Curtly Ambrose.
Curtly Ambrose.
I don't think.
Oh, you said footballer, not cricketer.
Well, I was going to get Viv Richards played international football for Antigua, didn't he?
Did he really?
Yeah, as well as you know, him in the manner of Ian Botham playing for Scunthorpe. Yeah,
12 appearances made Ian Botham made for Scunthorpe, didn't score a single goal.
Is that right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because that was the question, wasn't it, about England captains or something like that? I think it's great. Hamberdussey Lane, Saturday afternoon, 2:00, isn't it? I think.
I was going to say what time is kickoff. Does anybody
know?
I knew it was Saturday, but I didn't actually find out the kickoff time. So
it's 2:00. I was sent a post the other day, and it's 2:00 at Hamberdussey Lane, Antigua and Barbuda.
Antigua and Barbuda is the country
against Ipswich Wanderers.
That's not fair playing two.
And there possibly maybe some ringers in the Ipswich Wanderers side, I've been told.
Oh, really?
With town pasts, although I'm not quite sure who.
Mr. Bazell, by any chance?
See, I don't know. See local press for details, or TWTD if I get an email from the correct people.
Oh, I'm sure with that little request, you'll be inundated, so you can tell us all about it over on the message board and on the website in the next few days.
Okay. With the winners to go on to play the winner of the Brantham Athletic versus Bhutan song.
Yeah. They're actually, Antiguans are preparing for a game against Cuba. So that's quite interesting. And, of course, you've got town's own kind of, I say Caribbean, but Bermuda isn't in the Caribbean, is it?
Technically not.
No, they're playing Trinidad and Tobago in the next round of the World Cup, and Reggie Lamb is in their squad for two friendly games with Barbados next week. So, you know, we've got to keep our eyes on the World Cup preparations out there. And the mad, huge number of games teams from CONCACAF play on their way. It's ridiculous.
South America is another one, don't they? Because South America all play each other.
Yeah.
They play a league system, don't they? For a whole continent, virtually. Yeah. And then the top so many go into... Do they go straight through or do they have to play?
I think it's about top four go through and then there's one in a playoff or something like that.
Top four, one in a playoff. Because a couple of years ago I was in Ecuador when they qualified for the World Cup. And they sneaked into fourth. And the two games they played over there both ended 0-0. And I was left wondering, how did these guys get into the World Cup, drawing everything 0-0?
The Tranmere Rovers of South America.
The Tranmere Rovers of South America. Yeah, I'm sure they've been described as that many a time. again, that was a bit like, obviously, Hull was on Saturday in Ecuador. The streets were empty. They had live TV coverage 5 hours before the game. And the ground was already full.
Like Cup Final Day in the 1980s when ITV and BBC used to battle it out.
It's a Cup Final swap shop. Yeah. It's a Cup Final news at...
Peter Fawn against Gary Lineker in snooker matches and all sorts of...
Cup Final masterminds.
Yeah, everything, didn't they? Yeah. I mean, it's even like kind of... it's Cup Final news night the previous evening to sort of get you in the mood. Jeremy Paxman wearing a bubble hat.
Keeping it local, actually, speaking of sport, I can't let the show go past without giving a mention to the Ipswich Witches with their 7 in a row victories going from bottom to top in record time, and all credit to the lads. They've
top of the league.
Yeah, I mean, Ray was the first to complain about the rules and regulations at Speedway implement and then don't implement and then don't appeal and then all the rest of it. But Ipswich have been in the situation where what is traditionally reserve spots, riders number 6 and 7, have had the four-man this season riding there for the last couple of weeks.
The Polish lad.
Peter, I think, would be the English equivalent. I'm sure it's not Piotr. Piotr, that's the one. Piotr Swiderski has been riding at number 6 for the last few weeks, and he's been scoring 15, 16, 17 points on a regular basis. And if you get someone like that scoring for you, that's going to help you massively. And did you see the game on Sky, or the match on
Sky?
Yeah,
I saw the one on Sky.
Yeah, way to Wolves. They were 6 or 7 or 8 points down after a few heats and then came back to win reasonably pretty comfortably.
Yeah, 8 points down after 4 heats it was, wasn't it? Yeah. And it was fantastic performance, really, I thought. And I mean, I'm not a huge Speedway fan, but I do keep my eye on it when it's on the when it's on Sky, certainly. And yeah, it's fantastic to see the Witches doing yeah. very well.
I think the added complications are going to come now because they've been riding a guest for Chris Lee because he's out with his broken arm. But now the new averages have come out. Well, without getting too deep into the complexities of it all, they're now not allowed to use a guest for him. They have to use rider replacement. But if you've got someone like Swiderski who can come in and Moscoviac has been on form as well, then it's not such a bad thing. But that does start to take a toll on the riders over the course of the meeting, over man and machine. So you just wonder if the Witches management have got a signing up their sleeve to bring in the next week or two.
Yeah, I'm actually planning to go up. In the near future to a meeting up at Vauxhall for research purposes for when we've got Mike Smiley on, haven't we?
We've got Pete Simmons. Pete Simmons, the current Witches manager. We've got him on the week before the Speedway British GP.
He's a very tall man, isn't he?
He's a very tall man.
In outside Tesco, funnily enough. And, yeah.
He's seen to spend your life there, I think.
Same old focus.
So, so anyway, we're starting to run out of time. Abel's not here again, so I do hope he is.
He'll be here.
He'll come bursting through the door in a minute.
We're having 15 minutes of a show, you'd have thought.
I'm surprised he didn't come in 10 minutes ago.
Yeah.
Off you go, lads, your time's up. So, anyway, what other sports on this week? Anybody know?
Champions League. Oh, we haven't mentioned last week.
Champions League was last week, not.
It was, yeah, but it was after the show.
Yeah, so, you're very right.
Genuinely new experience, feeling sorry for Chelsea. But there you go.
And John Terry.
He was dead unlucky, I thought. You slip over. I mean, I know what it's like to slip over and take penalties. It's obviously not in that situation. your leg goes from under you, what you do, and the poor lad just stuck it wide. And he's handed United the cup. And it seemed to me, the whole game, that no matter what Chelsea did, Man United were going to win. It just seemed to be their night.
Destiny, wasn't it?
Yeah, Chelsea hit the post three or four times.
Yeah, they did, definitely. Three times, I think it was the post and bar that hit the word.
Yeah, they should have won it.
But it does make you wonder, if Drogba hadn't been sent off, would he have taken that one of the first five penalties and spared Terry the agonies?
No idea.
My friend was there, he was a Manchester United supporter, he was sat at just an angle that it looked to him as if John Terry penalty had gone in. So he had that second where he thought they'd lost. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That millisecond. And then the crowd to his left started jeering the other Man United fans. So he was relieved. But he said it was just like Barcelona. He said it's just the same, you know, because you sort of think it's lost and then it's won. And
There you go.
Such are the fine line of success and failure.
Fine line, isn't it, between defeat and success. But all the jokes are going around about the Champions League being sponsored by Chocolate Orange next year, aren't they? Because Ryan Giggs said it's not Terry's, it's mine.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. I've had so many of these things.
There's the John Terry slipping over on the yellow post. Here he is.
Evening.
Sorry, Abel. Maybe we humbly apologise for last week.
We humbly apologise.
The route to take place.
Anyway, that's about us for this week. Thanks very much for listening, everyone. Next week we'll be looking ahead to the Euro 2008, which starts the week on Saturday. Tips for the title for that. I'm going for Argentina or Brazil, I think.
I'm going for Ecuador.
And Phil Ham? no response to that. He's going to go for England.
Holland, maybe.
I'm fancying Holland as well.
Croatia.
Yeah, even darker horses, I think. Yeah.
So anyway, thanks everyone for listening. We'll see you all again, same time, same place next week.